Hello, everyone. Welcome to the second season of the Front End Planning Guru podcast. Today, we have an exciting interview for you between Dr. Ed Gibson, our guru with 40 years of experience in the industry and 30 years of research in front end planning, and Jerry Iink. Mr. Iink is a retired engineering group director of project management and planning at Anheuser-Busch and has extensive experience in project management and planning, as well as involvement with CII. Dr. Gibson will be leading this conversation for the rest of this episode.
Thanks, Liam. Just a full disclosure here, Jerry and I have known each other, I guess, for about 20 years, and we actually worked on a number of things at CII and everything, so it's really a pleasure to have you here today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your work and experience, just to fill in some of the gaps?
First of all, Ed, delighted to join you today. I'm excited to share a little bit about what I know about front-end planning. But let me give you a little bit about my background first and foremost. I have an engineering degree from Purdue University, and then I have an MBA from St. Louis University. And I think the combination of those two degrees has worked well for all the various career opportunities I've had over the last 35, 40 years. My work experience has all been with one company, Anheuser-Busch Companies, for a little over 33 years. And it's a wonderful company. I could not have asked to be working for a company like that when I graduated college. But it's interesting because they have a very high regard for capital planning. And capital planning is the owner's version of what front-end planning is all about. And they held that in a high value. And that was very important because during my three decades there, we were in high growth. So the ability to plan capital and expend capital to meet our shareholders' expectations was very, very valuable. My working career at AB, as most people in an engineering department, I started as a project engineer, grew to project manager type roles, and that expanded into a program manager role for our subsidiary work. Then that grew into starting a group for the business side, which was procurement and contracting. And then that finally grew into my role as group director, project management and planning. And I was part of a team there that was responsible for the capital planning for our entire corporation. And we spent somewhere between $750 million and $1 billion a year. So capital planning was extremely expensive or extremely valuable because it was an expensive item on the overall sheet each year. So our capital plan encompassed all our business units. Our first and largest business unit was the beer business, a consumer product company. But we also had ancillary businesses making cans, making malt and rice to support our business operations from a brewing standpoint. We had international brewery deals in the UK and China. But what many people don't realize, we also had family entertainment. We had Busch Gardens, SeaWorld. So that was a completely different type of business, as well as we had lots of opportunities in commercial operations. We owned the St. Louis Cardinals, so we have sports facilities backgrounds and buildings to be involved with. And even to support our marketing group, we would do things such as building a sign, Budweiser sign in Times Square. And building a sign in Times Square in the middle of New York City is not the easiest thing without a little front-end planning. So one of the things our company prided itself in was we called it a we company, great company to work for. It's all about people. They had high expectations, and really, they didn't think anything could not be done. So we were challenged a lot. Once I retired from AB, I stayed active. My first focus is on leadership for emerging leaders. So I try to help share my knowledge with organizations, executive management programs, even to get a chance to help Ed and other folks at ASU on occasions in some of their lectures. And then my second focus is sharing knowledge and wisdom with the industry. And I think Liam indicated or Ed indicated to potentially work with CII. And now Ed and I do similar things with the National Academy of Construction. So I've had a great career. Looking forward to sharing some of my thoughts on front-end planning this today.
Great. Thanks, Jerry. I think your third focus is golf. So anyway, so
I only think 154 rounds last year.
You know, just your experience is great. And I know, you know, I knew you when you were working at Anheuser-Busch, and I can tell you doing research in this area, and we worked with AB for a number of years doing a number of these research projects. You guys are one of the best companies in the business in terms of planning. So our audience is pretty diverse, but they have all one thing in common. That's an interest in this front-end planning process, and your experience with it can bring a lot of value to the table. So what I'd ask you is, what are your top three or four pieces of advice that you would give our audience concerning front-end planning? And you're doing this obviously from a facility owner's perspective and also an owner who was in the commodity market and also did a wide variety of different kinds of projects.
Wow, that's a great question. And I could probably talk for hours on front-end planning, but I will just try to share my four top wisdoms that I think are the most important for front-end planning. And a couple of these might be counterintuitive to the audience, but first and foremost, front-end planning is a tool that's to satisfy a business need. We have to remember that engineering departments are in the business to build and execute projects to support the company's business need. We don't do projects just to do projects. So it's very important that we keep our priority number one to satisfy the business needs, the most cost-effective, easiest way to get the project done, because our objective is to return value to the shareholder. We were a public company, so the bottom line is the shareholders wanted a return on the dollars invested. That's first and foremost, the business need. My second wisdom, I would say, is front-end planning is not a like-to-do thing. It is a must-do activity. I can't imagine a project being successful without a proper amount of front-end planning. And you can read in the literature time after time again, project failures, and usually the lack of the project or the project failed because of lack of front-end planning. So front-end first key is to get all the right stakeholders together. And those stakeholders then work to identify the project, set the priority, identify roles and responsibilities of all the team members. And they do communicate that to then all team members. So it's very, very clear. But two key people or two key units must be involved in the front-end planning. That's the business unit itself and the operational unit. And it took me a while to convince our business units of this, but I think a way to do that is to emphasize that a front-end planning is usually 2 to 3 month activity. And that 2 or 3 month activity, they're providing input that's going to be used to operate that facility for the next 10, 20, or 30 years, whatever the useful life of that facility is. So their input is extremely valuable. Whenever I would get pushback from them on not being involved, I would often remind them that when they become responsible for that asset, their bonus is going to be based on the ability for that asset to deliver what it was supposed to be. So their special interests are in mind as well. The third, and I think as important as any, is front-end planning allows you to create a high predictability for the project. That's predictability on a schedule standpoint and a predictability from a cost estimating standpoint. And in my opinion and my experience, is predictability of both cost and schedule is more valuable than actually the true value or the low cost of the project or actually the schedule of the project. Let me explain why I think that's so important. When you set a startup date, the project is planned and you set a startup date. Now your business unit takes that startup date and all their operational plans and ancillary plans are based on that startup date. So if you're not able to achieve that startup date, their upstream and downstream supply chain becomes chaos. So let me do an example from the beer business, for example. When we say we're going to have a brewery start up on date X, and we achieve that, everything is based on that X date. So that means all the raw materials are in place to start brewing at that date. All the packaging and bottling is in place to start packaging on that date. All the marketing costs are in place to start marketing the product on that date. All the logistics and distributions in place. So there's many things that are in process being used based on the startup date that we give them from a front-end planning standpoint. So being predictable is absolutely essential. And then my fourth wisdom is front-end planning. The value is at the end of the front-end planning process, you're going to allow your company to make a go or no-go decision on whether that project is going to go forward. is going to go forward and whether it meets the financial demands or hurdles that your company's put in place. Does it meet the financial goals or expectations? Now, as engineers, we all want to do a project. We get excited about doing projects, and that's what we're paid to do projects. But one of the things I emphasize to my teams all along, it's important to be true in the front-end planning process to get the best numbers together, because even if we prove that that project is a no-go, we've done our job. It's not a failure. It's a success to stop a project in the front-end planning stage rather than stopping it sometime during design or, God forbid, all the way to startup when we determine that it's not a financial viable project. So front-end planning, yes, we've expended 2 or 3 months of work, but that's a whole lot less expensive than spending millions and millions of dollars throughout the process or the project's completed. So we're a no-go decision can actually be the best decision a project team can make in a front-end planning process. So in a big picture, those are my top four. Does that help at all, Ed?
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. I think, based on what I've seen over the years, those are great pieces of advice. I think that last one, the predictability piece is critical. And many times predictability drives our ability to get cash and financing as well, because, organizations that aren't predictable, you start to lose faith in can they deliver. I think the last piece is that the project foregone might be the best decision ever made for a business. And we looked at a number of projects over 30 years that were kind of skeletons in the closet, so to speak, with many different corporations, not necessarily Anheuser-Busch, but projects that were completed and never met their potential and actually were anchors around the necks of those organizations. So this is great advice. Looking at your background,
Ed, can I add one more thing on predictability that I think is important that came to mind?
Yeah.
One is the unintended consequences of not making your date.
Yeah.
People often say, if you don't make your date, no, so what? I'm a few months late. But if you say I was going to have a project done by the end of a year and that didn't happen, I roll over to the first quarter of the next year.
Right.
And say that rollover is $50 million. Well, essentially, the company has got not getting the return on that $50 million in the year they had planned. It's being deferred. So likely they're not spending something else in that second year. But if you just look at a company like Anheuser-Busch or any consumer product company, if you delay $50 million, the opportunity cost, if a company's making only 10%, maybe 15%, that's a $5 to $7.5 million lost opportunity cost by not spending that money or not being predictable in that spending that money. And many, many engineers and constructors in our business overlooked what those consequences are, or unintended consequences of not making dates.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the cost driver, cost shift that happens in terms of the life cycle of the project too. And it really can cause lots of ripples. And if you're working in an organization, if the CEO leadership starts to lose faith that you can actually deliver, that's another consequence that you don't see here. So it really becomes something that can become a spiral in that situation.
Absolutely.
And we've seen companies that have actually gone down that trail and never recovered, in our industry over the years, as we look back. So you've talked a lot about consumer products business, which is really an industrial front-end planning process. And we've got people listening to this podcast who do projects in other sectors. Can you talk a little bit about your experience with front-end planning in other sectors? You mentioned, the Cardinals Stadium. You mentioned, different theme parks and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Ed, front-end planning is critical, regardless of the type of project that we're doing or what project sector we're in. The principles, the process, the protocol can be the same. It's up to us as project managers, program managers, planners, to be able to take the information or wisdom we have from an industrial type project and apply the same principles to other type of project contexts. It doesn't necessarily need to be an industrial project. There's lots of examples of this, but what I would like to maybe share with you is what I've done in comparing the the brewing process to the theme park industry. Not only did we have theme parks, but there's other theme park organizers out there that say, hey, if you are doing an industrial project, a theme park is much different. I would like to suggest that they're more similar than dissimilar. And if you look at the overall project cost of a brewery project or an industrial type project versus a theme park project, I would suspect that 50 to 70% of those costs are similar, and maybe 30 to 50% of them might be a little bit different. And here's the context I want to put that in. If you look at those two types of projects, the similarities are they all have infrastructure, they all have site work. They all have parking lots, they have roads. They all have buildings and maybe warehousing. They all have electrical control systems. They all have mechanical systems. They probably have water type systems. They have safety systems. So there's a lot more similarity in those projects than dissimilarity. The difference is, and what makes one stand out versus the other, is the process that they're building. A brewery is building a brewing process and a packaging production process. And a theme park may be doing a natural exhibit or a water tank, things like that, to represent the theme park. So the difference is you're working with very specific supply partners for brewing vessels and very specific supply partners for packaging lines. In the contrast for a theme park, you're working with very specific building partners for water tanks or theming for animal habitats types of things. So if you take it to look at the comparison a little bit more, the process equipment or the is different. Taking a brewery or has bottle lines and can lines. Theme parks might have thrill rides. A brewery has tanks and brewing vessels. A theme park may have water tanks for whales, like in SeaWorld, or other type of animal habitats. But you're applying the same checklist of protocols to both of those to try to ensure that your scope that you've identified is as clear as possible. There's as few unknowns as possible. But the reality is the protocol and the checklist is being applied to the same in the same way, just to a different specified process. And in the big picture, we're applying a very disciplined process to both type of business sectors. I think they're very, very similar. Just need to apply the same discipline to be successful in both. Does that make sense from a comparison standpoint?
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. That's a great example, and I agree with it completely. I really want to thank you for being with us here today. I hope the people in the podcast have learned a lot about this front-end planning process. I think those four things you brought to the table are extremely important, and many times engineers and constructors don't think about those things when they're planning, and yet they're extremely important to having a successful venture for the client. So thanks all of you for listening to this episode of the podcast, and we'll be back with more content soon. Thank you.